Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah. It's not worth it to hold it in, but it's easy for me to be vulnerable. It is. And I know it's not as easy for like others.
Not easy for.
Or this one either. Both of them. No pressure, Meredith and Lisa. I know you need time.
Pointy's like, pass the conch.
No pressure, but reveal your deepest, darkest secrets immediately on camera or else. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Everything Iconic with me, Danny Pellegrino. That was a clip from this week's Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. The season's only on episode 3, and it's delivering week after week after week after week. And I can't even wait to see where we end up. That preview from the trailer of the lingerie fight is happening in episode 3. Normally, Housewives make us wait till the end of the season for that. Remember the Beverly Hills trailer for this season? All the good stuff happened at the end of the season, but not Salt Lake City. They're like, here we are, lights up in 1998 Scottsdale, Arizona house. And we're having drama already. So we're going to be covering it all because I'm going to mention it all. We're going to be talking about this week's Salt Lake City. But before we do, I do want to just quickly say, rest in peace to Angela Lansbury, a queen, an icon, and a legend. And I just want to read something that I saw on Twitter because I love Angela Lansbury, of course, from Murder, She Wrote. And she was the voice of Mrs. Potts in Beauty and the Beast, a legendary role. But Emmy Potter, who's someone who's great to follow on Twitter, we love Emmy, but she wrote, Murder, She Wrote, along with Golden Girls, helped audiences see older women as glamorous, sexy, funny, industrious, confident, capable, and three-dimensional people instead of disposable once they reached age 50 plus. Jessica Fletcher / Angela Lansbury was the blueprint. And so I just wanted to say that because I do think that it was an important time, the early 90s, the late 80s, especially for women over 50. And we often talk about the housewives and how they're one of the few places on TV where we see women over 50 being complicated characters and individuals and dealing with death, divorce, marriage, kids, work, businesses, all sorts of things. And so I really think that Emmy was spot on when she said that Murder, She Wrote, Golden Girls, some of those early series on television really were the blueprint for a lot of these housewives that we watch, as well as so many other things and complicated female dynamics on television. So rest in peace to a queen, an icon, and a legend. And honestly, that performance from Beauty and the Beast, I know it's like maybe even a little cliche to say. I love, of course, her work that she did with Bea Arthur. Bea Arthur has this one-woman show she did where she sings, and she and Angela Lansbury were friends. But my best friend Jill and I, we always used to love listening to Bea and Angela because we were like their best friends. And so anyway, I just, where was I at there? I just wanted to say that, and it might even be cliche, but the Beauty and the Beast, Tale as Old as Time performance is one of the best vocal performances of all time. And I think oftentimes voiceover artists in Disney movies, they don't get the credit they deserve for how good they are. And that particular performance was just incredible. Incredible. Anyway, all of that said, let's dive into the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. Now, we ended last week, of course, in that 1998 house in Scottsdale, Arizona, with Whitney Wild Rose revealing her abuse. She said she's been on a healing journey. Not laughing at the abuse, I'm laughing at the healing instead of healing. She's been on a healing journey. And last week, they gave us this, what I thought was like a red herring, where they were going to have Heather Gay being like, I don't believe the abuse. But it actually turned out the opposite, where Heather Gay was like, actually, how did you recover this memory? How did you figure it all out? She's asking Whitney all these questions. She says she's so broken and hurt by this information. And I thought Heather was going to be skeptical of the information, but it was the exact opposite. But Whitney says, you know, this is how Whitney explained how she found out the information. She said, you know how you have feelings? I don't know why Whitney's Utah accent, because I talked about this last week on the show, and people pointed out that Whitney just has a very aggressive Utah accent. And I say that as someone with a very aggressive Cleveland accent. You know, my A's come out really hard sometimes. But Whitney's healing, feelings, like the changing the E to the I, just makes it, It makes me laugh. And I've been so focused on it this season. And I don't think I've ever noticed once. This is the first time where all of a sudden I'm like noticing every time Whitney Rose, Wild fucking Rose talks, she's like hillin', fillin's and so stupid, but it's cracking me up and it's making me laugh even more. I'm getting like the church giggles because she's talking about these like really serious abuse allegations and stuff. And like, I feel bad for all of that, but she's like, I'm hillin' from my fillin's. It's like so stupid. I know it's so wrong. It's so wrong of me, but I can't help it. Anyway, Heather says that the wind like literally left her lungs. She said her heart is breaking. They're totally making it seem like it was one thing, but now we see that Heather actually feels really bad for her dear cousin, although she doesn't feel bad for long because at that garbage or lingerie party, woo! Some feuding cousins at that garbage or lingerie party, which, by the way, that whole party was fucking nuts, and I can't wait to discuss it because I have so many thoughts on those outfits they were wearing. The fact that they're just wearing these outfits in a household with women. And by the way, this is when I wish Mary was still around, because what I would give to see what Mary would have worn to the garbage or lingerie party.
Little girl.
Where there's no one even there. It's just the gals in a camera crew, five women. And I just thought, like, imagine that. I mean, I've gone on girls' trips and stuff with a handful of people. And I can't imagine us all dressing in dominatrix outfits, like lingerie. So stupid. I love it. I love it. Anyway, so Whitney tells all the gals they need to be vulnerable now. She says, no pressure, Meredith and Lisa, but you need to be vulnerable. You got to do it. And so then Lisa apologizes again. She said that whole thing where she called Meredith Garbature behind the mic, she said it was being hyperbolic. Hyperbolic? Am I saying that name right? Now I can't pronounce the word. Anyway, she says, Meredith, all I can say is I'm deeply sorry. And Meredith's like, well, I never fully trusted you, and now I know why. And Lisa says in her confessional that she didn't just make up the rant. Okay, this is the smoking gun. This is the whole thing that I'm interested in talking about, because Lisa says that everything that she said behind the door wasn't something that just came to mind. She said in the confessional this week that it wasn't stuff she made up. So, like, what did she mean by that? What did she mean? I don't know. There's a lot of other instances, Meredith says, that Lisa was talking shit about her. Apparently, it was a tale as old as time, if you will. Tale as old as time for friends calling each other garbage whores, fucking half New York behind the door of a cast trip. Apparently, it's tales as old as time because Meredith said she heard of Lisa doing this a lot. She said it's happened to other instances. And Lisa said, there were not. It was a one-time thing. And Meredith is trying to say something, but she's talking, again, at a speed of a snail because Meredith was trying to get something out. And Lisa did keep interrupting, but I was on Lisa's side, even though I don't like an interrupter, because it was like, Meredith, you need to spit it out. She was just talking so slow. She's like, I've heard of other things where you said this. It's like, spit it out, Mayor, because anyone's going to interrupt you. I was ready to drive up to that 1998 household. If I would have had a DeLorean, I would have hopped in it to get in that 1998 Scottsdale house so that I could have interrupted Meredith because it was going too slow. Like, speed it up. We only got 42 minutes of this show. I mean, Meredith's talking sometimes as if we got a double length episode. And last week they did expand the episode, and I believe that was largely due to Meredith's speed talking because it was happening at a very slow pace. And I'm just saying, when you're on camera, sometimes you need to speed it up, gals. We don't have all the time in the world, so you can't talk in circles. You need to get out your point and move on, because we got 44 minutes, and then we got commercial breaks. They got to do the commercials where we have our women hawking the movies that are coming out. You know, they're doing those commercials where they're seeing the movies. Dorit, Crystal, and Sutton got to promote Don't Worry, Darling. Like, these are the commercials that we have to have in between these in between the scenes of the episodes. So they got to pay the bills, keep the lights on at Bravo. So Meredith, we need you to speed it up. I'm sorry to say. Love me some air. But Lisa was interrupting. I thought rightfully so. But then Lisa really lost me because she's like, I'm not going to slip my wrists. And then Jen is like, you know what the problem is when Jen's like the voice of reason. And then Jen has to interrupt one of the other gals and be like, you're actually doing something inappropriate. And that's when I really start to laugh, because it's like, Jen Shah, of course, she's got to be the voice of reason on this show. And she tells Lisa, hey, like, Meredith has a family member who's trying to commit suicide. And Lisa's just like, oops.
Learning you were wrong.
Lisa's, oops, I didn't know that. I mean, I'm laughing because it's all so ridiculous. This whole episode to me, I think this was one of like the greatest comedies. It was so cringe. Like every moment of this episode was so incredibly cringe. And I love that sort of cringy humor. So I just thought it was flawless. But I mean, definitely I understood why Meredith was like, Lisa, and all the gals were like, maybe Lisa, you should use your verbiage a little differently. Like, don't say something about slit and wrist because, and then Lisa don't even know what to say. She's just like, oops. And then it all shifts because the best trait of a housewife, I believe, is when things are happening with other people and then the housewife has to turn the conversation around and make it about themselves. Those to me are like the best housewives, right? When there's one fight going on and then you could see the other woman who's not involved in the fight and they're sitting at the end of the dinner table and just thinking, how can I make the tension on me now? And that's exactly what happened with Jen Shah. She was sitting there. The conversation was between Meredith and Lisa. And then Jen just all of a sudden shouts out. She's like, I wouldn't be here without my husband's kids and Faith. And she says, I hope no one here goes through what I'm going through. This whole thing puts it into perspective. She turned that table. One thing about them tables, they're about to turn. She turned them. And then Heather and Lisa, they're like, amen, Jen Shah. And I just love Jen Shah. The voice of reason, making it about herself. She's getting the best room at this 1998 house. And it's shocking to me because she's the one who's bamboozled the elderly. And yet this is what's happening. And so it's just crazy to me. Everything about this show is not something that you could script. Sometimes I feel like them other franchises, you could maybe script it a little bit. Like you can almost imagine how it's going to happen. But this one, I'm like, there's no way any writers could sit down and write this episode because it's too fucking batshit insane to write these women. And I love them. I love them. Anyway, Meredith says at the end of this dinner table or whatever, this was still the shaman night, or as Meredith said, the shaman. What did she call the shaman last week? Shamananan. But this was still that night when they had the cacao, and we're still on night one. We haven't even entered night two. And Meredith ends it by saying, I hear your apology. Thank you, but we're not at a resolution. And then Whitney says, well, should we burn something? You know, Whitney's just into the hippy dippy. She's like, what should we burn? Where's the cacao powder? Like, let's get it moving. Then we wake up day two. They label it day two. Day two. I love when we get that timestamp. We're only on day two and we've already gotten so much. These gals are clocking in this season. They're clocking in and Jen's waking everyone up with that fucking air horn. She's just like wanting to have a good time. Good time gal, Jen Shah. Meanwhile, Meredith and Jen have glam teams. And Heather's like, why the fuck do you have glam teams here in Arizona? Like, first of all, the only person I think they've really seen are the, who have they seen on this Arizona trip? We had the shaman, in the words of Meredith. Okay, she was number one. And then, of course, they saw them women on the horses. And I don't know that they really need to be glammed up to see them women on the horses. And the, what were they wearing? The Dolce? Or I don't remember what it was. They were in some outfit from a 2007 fashion show that Lisa Barlow's obsessed with. So they saw the horses and the women on the horses. And then that's about it. So, like, what do we need the glam teams for? And also, by the way, Jen Shah, of all people, shouldn't be paying for the glam team because you should save the coins. I'm sorry. I say again, like I said last week on the show, we need Susie Orman on here to give them some money advice because Jen Shah, I'm sorry, just maybe shouldn't be paying for the glam because I know the Bravo's not paying for the glam. Heather's doing her own makeup. She's sitting putting on the rouge on her own. Okay. Not to mention, it doesn't matter what you have on your face. You're going to look good in comparison to that fucking house you're staying in. It doesn't matter. You could show up in clown makeup and you'd look good compared to the decorations on that fucking house. In that house, Meredith was doing her glam team. Literally, remember I said on the show last week, I said in the preview, it looked like Meredith had the 1998 haircut. And I don't know how else to explain it, but the glam team gave her that 1998 hair. And I believe it to be because they were influenced by the home that they're in. And I think that it doesn't matter if these women had on rouge at the wazoo or if they were no makeup at all, they'd still look stunning in comparison to that living room and kitchen that they got to stay in. Because that house, I mean, it's one of the worst houses, one of the worst houses I've ever seen on a cast trip from the Housewives. So it doesn't matter. They don't need the glam. They should be saving their money of all places. I understand. You know, sometimes the Housewives, they go to the really glamorous vacation, right? Especially Beverly Hills. Sometimes they go to really, they go to Aspen. Remember in the Aspen, even Kyle's small house was very nice. But then the other gals were at that nice, gorgeous big house. And so I get it. Like you're in a nice, modern, kind of cozy house in Aspen. You might want to look a little glamorous. But when you're in this fucking Scottsdale, Arizona house, you could put on, you could rub something on your face from the grass. Just rub grass on your face and give you a little green tint and you look great. It doesn't even matter. You could just rub your face in whatever you see around you. Doesn't matter because you're going to look good in comparison to that house. Anyway, they're all doing their thing. And Heather walks into Meredith and she's like, you need to stop being a condescending superior bitch. And I actually am agreeing with Heather in this moment, even though in real life, okay, let me make this distinction. If this was real life and I was Meredith, I say again, I would never want to forgive Lisa Barlow. I'm sorry. I would maybe forgive, but I just would never speak to her again, right? Like I might get over it and I'd forgive for my own peace of mind. But I certainly wouldn't want to be friends with someone like that again. I'd just be like, well, they called me a garbage whore, fucked half of New York, said my husband can't hold down a job. Don't need to be friends with them no more. But for the sake of the show, I do think that eventually Meredith is going to have to just accept the apology, move on. Otherwise, we're going to get in this audience standstill where we're on a hamster wheel and we're just going over and over again the same stuff. We're not moving storylines forward. And so I think that's what Heather is trying to tell Meredith. Like, hey, stop doing this because we need to move on. Otherwise, the audience is going to get tired. So that's what I think is happening. And I don't think Meredith is wrong here. I think Lisa's in the wrong. But I do think that we just have to accept it. Then we cut to, sit tight, little bear. Then we cut to the party bike. That's right. I hear the driver. He yells, all aboard the Genshock Express. He renamed that. What do you call that? Where they pedal and drink? I mean, we've seen that too many times in the house size, right? We're going to have to retire this where you have to pedal yourself. I'm not interested in pedaling myself anyway. Like if I'm on a vacation and if the vacation is as bad as the Scottsdale, Arizona house from 98, then I certainly don't want to be pedaling on the day. It's hot there too. I just don't want to be pedaling and they're all doing it. I think we saw this on Jersey. We've seen it elsewhere and I'm just not, I think we need to retire with the axe throwing. It's been one too many times. They all got to pedal. And that man, I love the man, the driver. I don't remember his name. Was it Ken? I'm not sure. I didn't write it down. Unclear. Anyway, he's really excited. He's yelling, everybody pedal, pedal, pedal. And I thought, give him a pedal tongue class because he's someone who should be up there with our Cody Rigsby. I mean, this man, he was auditioning for Peloton and I would just like to, someone from Peloton to reach out. I think Peloton's a sponsor of Everything Iconic. So Peloton, if you're listening, go and reach out to this man. I don't know his name, but I'd like to get him out of that Scottsdale, Arizona pedaling business. And I'd like him to pedal on over to the Peloton bike because that's where he belongs. He's a star. He's a star. He was just getting them gals drunk. And meanwhile, he's driving while Whitney Wild Rose is upside down on the pole. And Jen Shah is pouring alcohol in her Meredith Grey. Just pouring the old rosé over her Meredith Grey and Lisa's bubbies. And they're all like the most insane scene I've ever seen on the outside. And this scene happened so quickly. Nothing really dramatic happened. But I do believe that if it was any other franchise, we would have all been like, what the fuck just happened? And the fact that it was Salt Lake City, I think we all moved past it too quickly because it was fucking nuts. I mean, they were all trying to have like a good television, like they were trying to give us good TV. And I actually think that's why this trip has been so good at the Scottsdale, Arizona house is because I think they lost that Jenny woman, right? Right before filming. Mary Cosby's not back. And so these women were going into the season like, uh-oh, we only have five of us. Like we're all going to really have to bring it. And so I think the gals got together and they made like a pact with each other. And they said, we got to bring it because we're down two gals. And we're not sure what's going on with the cast, so we need to all bring it. And so this was an example, this party bike scene where they're just throwing these cheap champagne or cheap rosé or whatever at each other. Meredith and Lisa passive-aggressively throwing cheap wine at each other. I mean, it was truly insane. And I just think we need to touch down on it for a while because I couldn't believe when Whitney was upside down. When she was upside down. I don't know other way to say it. And Jen Shah was just pouring it up the skirt. I mean, that was something that was truly, what was going on? What was going on? I mean, I've never seen anyone do that. And I've had parties with people, but I believe that was a reaction of the camera of like, the cameras are on us and there wasn't really like drama happening. And so they were like, we need attention and we need to do something so that this airs. And then they were like, well, let's just go upside down and go, is it vertical and just pour some cheap rosé up Whitney Wild Rose's skirt. Let's see what happens. And they did. And over Lisa's bubbies. And it was, I was just thinking about how sticky they probably were. Cause it wasn't like, expensive. It wasn't like they were pouring expensive champagne. It was like those cans of cheap rosé. And I was like, uh-oh, this would be all sticky. That's all I was thinking about the whole time. I was like, I would need to be hosed down immediately. And instead, they just went to see horses. And I was thinking, imagine how dirty they must have felt by the end of the day. When I'm around a horse, my allergies go insane from all that horse hair and everything. So not only are they covered in like sticky alcohol, but then they're in a farm or a horse place and they're putting on used clothes that Lisa just had a rack of clothes and was like, put on this dress. I'd be like, fuck no, I'm not putting on somebody's dress. I'm sticky with champagne or rosé or the fuck that you poured up my wazoo. So I certainly wouldn't be putting on some old dress. And I know it looked like clean or whatever, but it's still, I just wouldn't have put on a new outfit. I would have been like, I need a shower fully clean. Maybe they did in between and I just missed it. I mean, I know they don't normally show the women showering unless they're Ramona on Ultimate Girls Trip season one. But the point is, I think that they must have felt gross by the end of this whole day. The end of the whole day, it was, anyway, this Dior rodeo. Shall we talk about this Dior rodeo? I mean, okay. So Lisa says, horses have always been healing for me, so maybe this will be a great bonding experience. And then they see, then they see the horses and they're watching, like, I've never seen anything like this, like synchronized horses. I mean, these activities, I know I just talked a bunch of shit about that pedal bike thing that they did. But the activities they do on Salt Lake, like, I really love how absurd they are. Like, we're just going to watch synchronized horses. And it makes me feel like the producers on Salt Lake City, they are just operating at a much higher level than on the other ones. Because although we might get something like the pedal biking, which has been done ad nauseum, at least we're also getting, like, synchronized horses, which is something I've never seen. Have you ever seen Vicky Gunvalson at watching a synchronized horse? I certainly have not. And so they're giving us something new and different amongst all the other things that we've seen a million times, right? So I'm really just proud of them. And I just think the other producers, they need to sit tight and figure out, make a list of all the things that we haven't seen on these shows and figure it out. Because if Salt Lake City can give us this Dior rodeo with synchronized horses and all the gals are watching, they're like, wow. And they're like, wow, look how cool this is. But then I didn't understand the Dior. I felt like I missed something with them Dior fashions, and I didn't even know what the fuck they were saying. But Meredith was pretending that she didn't spread the rumors. I mean, Meredith and Whitney Wild Rose are like on a, they're both trying to pretend like they didn't spread these rumors, which it's so clear that they did. Remember last week on the show or 2 weeks ago, they sat down together and they're like, yeah, Lisa sells Vita Tequila, gets sexual favors for Vita Tequila. Anyway, Whitney didn't get on the horse. She just walked next to the horse. She walked next to it because she didn't want to have any horse fill-ins between her. She was probably too sticky. I mean, and God bless, because I wouldn't want to, if I was that horse, I wouldn't want Whitney Wild Rose's rosé-soaked legs straddling me. That'd be the last thing I'd want as a horse. And I know they can't always talk, save for Mr. Ed, but I think that if any of those horses saw Whitney Wild Rose, they'd want to run the other way. So I actually think there was like some sort of, I don't know how you'd explain it, like a spiritual connection between the horse that Whitney was with. And I think the horse, you know how you could do like telekinesis or something, or like, I don't know what the term is, where you can communicate with each other via the mind. I feel like that's what the horse did to Whitney Wild Rose and was like, don't ride me. You know, that's what the horse was saying, telekinesisly or whatever the fuck you call it. The horse is like, don't ride me. Don't ride me. Like, I feel like that's what happened, because the horse probably knew instinctively that her hoo-ha was covered in that babe rosé or whatever the fuck they were drinking on that pedal bike with that young man. So the horse, that was a smart horse, but Whitney didn't have to, she didn't fill the horse between the legs. She had her fill-ins next to the horse. She's walking with the horse. And so the horse didn't have to hill. He didn't have to do any hilling afterwards from all the dirty rosé that was on in betwixt her legs. We have to take a quick break. Here we'll be back with much more of The Real Houses of Salt Lake City. Find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Also, thank you to Acast. We'll be right back. Anyway, then we see all the gals glamming for the Garbage Whore lingerie party. Now, Jen says to her makeup artist, look, like, I can't take all the credit for the Garbage Whore lingerie party because it was actually Lisa who says it. And so she was explaining to the makeup artist, like, Lisa actually said it behind a hot mic, and so that's why we're doing it. Now, Whitney says she wants to break the cycle, so she decides to tell Lisa about the Meredith conversation that they had. Meanwhile, the women are dressed totally insane. Meredith shows up in an I Love New York hat.
Taylor's old as time.
And she's just really leaning into this fucking half of New York bit, because we saw her in the confessional a couple weeks ago where she's got the I Love New York mug. And now she's showing up, Bubby's out, with the New York hat on for the Garbage Whore Lingerie Party. I mean, she's really leaning in, and I got to give her that. It's funny. And they keep showing how she fucked half of New York. They keep showing that clip, like Lisa saying, she fucked half of New York. And then Lisa just shows up in pajamas, just in pajamas. She's like, I feel sexy in this. And it's just, that would have been me. I really related her then, especially if I was on camera. I mean, I'm not someone who's going to be nude all the time anyway, but particularly if I was going to be on the Bravo Network, I certainly wouldn't feel comfortable dressing with everything out. I would have been like so self-conscious the whole time I was filming. I mean, I wouldn't feel right. And not that these women shouldn't feel right, because they all have beautiful, stunning bodies, perfect bodies. I'm just saying, me personally, I would have showed up in the long pajamas. I would have been like fully covered. I would have been like those family Christmas morning pajamas, like just flannel. They would have been like Garbage Whore Lingerie Party, but Dan would have just been in like some Mickey Mouse t-shirt or Super Mario Brothers pajama bottoms from Target. Like, that's what I would have worn to the Garbage Whore Party, because I just don't know on camera. I don't know that I would have been able to do it. But Whitney has got, like, the butt is out. She looks amazing. I mean, again, these women, their bodies look amazing, but it's insane that they're just doing it just on camera for each other. And not that they should be doing it for men either, by the way. I'm just saying, it's like, so at least if it was like a big party, you know, if this was a big function where tons of people were showing up, it was a big lingerie party or a Halloween party or something like that, it feels right to me. But for the fact that it's just five women being like, let's dress in our sexiest lingerie, and then Lisa in her pajama bottoms. Anyway, Whitney says Meredith put her in the middle of all the rumors, but we've seen that Whitney's lying, and she's getting drunk, and I'm loving it. I think she's infuriating, like if I was one of the women, but I'm loving watching her, because she's just sort of drunk, and she talks about this thing that I don't think they showed it to us when Meredith and Whitney sat down, but there was a flashback to Whitney talking about her friend who was being swayed to invest in Vita Tequila. And then we learned something about Angie H and Jazz Game Seats. Now, I don't know how to relay the exact information about what they were talking about. Don't know what the fuck they were saying. Something about court-sized jazz seats. But I don't understand the logistics of like what Lisa exactly was being accused of, other than it was like some sexual favors. But then I just didn't understand like where the court-sized jazz seats were coming. I don't know. But Whitney says to the group, I don't feel like I can authentically move forward because I feel bad. And she's like, Meredith, you need to say it. You need to say it. And Whitney's like, I'm coming from a place of strength. And she says, everyone is used to me being Nancy Drew, and I don't want to know anymore. I don't want to know anymore. And Whitney's totally nuts. I mean, Whitney's nuts. She storms inside and she's like, I'm done with the bullshit. I'm done with the bullshit. I'm tired of being Nancy Drew. I'm done with the fucking bullshit. And I was like, Whitney, what is going on with you? You made this whole thing, like you riled everybody up, and now you're riling yourself up. Like it's giving, and I love it. But it's insane. It's insane. She's just storming into that house. Like, I'm tired of being Nancy Drew. Out of my way. Everyone shut up. Let me get it out of my, let me tell you how it is. I don't want to know more. Whitney, like, calm it down. Calm it down. She says she's having a hard time because Lisa, she says, we have a real friendship. I feel... She says, I feel so conflicted because I've talked to Meredith about rumors about you. Meredith brought them up, though. She came to me, and I feel like I'm in the middle. She feels like she's in the middle. And then Lisa's like, I'm in shock. Like, wow, I thought marriage and family were off limits. And then Heather, God bless Heather Gay. I mean, she was just giving me so many moments this episode. I mean, I was obsessed with Heather Gay. This was, to me, peak Heather Gay. Because not only were they about to start fighting, like, Whitney was trying to get this all popping off immediately, and Heather's like, okay, slow it down. We need to get the food out first. And I was like, God bless you, Heather. God bless Heather Gay for being like, let's slow it down. Let's get the meals out. Because they were having steak and salmon and all sorts of stuff. They had that beautiful tray of greens they were putting in the oven or something they saw earlier when Whitney Wild Rose was put in the oven, because I was diverting my eyes from her bare ass. Because, you know, it's not something I need to see. Show me a dick or something on screen, I'll be looking. But Whitney Wild Rose's bare ass, not something I need to see. And so I was looking at the greens she was putting in the oven. And they look delicious. And so Heather's like, we can get this popping, but let's wait until the food's up. Because with house toys, you know that once it gets popping, we can't scale it back. We just can't. And then so people are storming out and then they miss their meals. And so I would be the same way, like, let's get the food out and then you can all rip each other's heads out. But let's first get the food on the table so that I'm not going to bed hungry. Anyway, so then they bleeped this thing about the jazz tickets. At least in my viewing of it, they bleeped the something, some man who has the jazz tickets. And Whitney's like, I'm not the one who started this whole thing. But she was. She told Meredith this whole thing. And Meredith's like, well, I've heard rumors. And I said I heard rumors, but not that specific one. And then Heather, being the voice of reason, she says, well, blowies for jazz tickets. I mean, that's a stretch. She says it's not Lakers tickets next to Jack Nicholson. So why would you give blowjobs for jazz tickets? Like, you would do it for Lakers, for Knicks. You would do it for some other, you know, Disney on Ice. I don't know.
Taylor's old as time.
But you wouldn't do it for Utah Jazz tickets, she's trying to say. Like, it's a thing. But otherwise, Heather says she's ready to give a blowjob for what she's got to do. And she says that later on in the episode. She's like, you give a blowjob. She said she'd do it for a hamburger. And I thought, me too. I mean, honestly, I got TMJ, but sometimes if you want something bad enough, I'd be like, whatever, do what you got to do. Sorry to say. But Lisa says, do you feel good? Do you guys feel good? Like, hurt me more. And Lisa's loving this because now she gets to play the victim, which is the role that all of these women ultimately want to play, right? Like, if they were in an audition, the role that they all be up for is victim, because that's where the housewife is most comfortable. They always want to be the victim. They want to be the aggressor, and then they want to immediately be the victim after that. That's the place they all want to go. Then Jen Shaw says in her confessional, y'all are fighting for courtside jazz tickets, and I'm fighting for my life. And who's a garbage whore and who's not? You're fighting over that? And Jen Shaw, I mean, I'm sorry. She's just giving me flawless interview bites. She's turning it around on herself throughout the whole episode. She says it's about me and not, shouldn't it be about this. Jen Shaw's doing flawless housewifery. And I hate to say that because, yes, she did bamboozle the elderly. And I do not support that. I do not support that. And I know that that's wrong. And I'm learning that.
Learning you were wrong.
Learning that I was wrong about that. But it is what it is. I got to live my truth. And I get in trouble every week. Every week you guys yell at me when I say something nice about Jen Shaw, and I'm not proud of it, but I'm here to give my opinion, and so this is my opinion, and so I know it's not good, and I'm not proud of it. Meredith said she heard Lisa talking shit about her for years, though, and Heather's like, we just need to breathe, everyone needs to breathe, because it was all, everyone is getting too hyped too quickly. So Lisa starts screaming, and obviously these women don't like each other at all, but she says, I just really don't know how much more I can take. I have taken the brunt of so much. All I have is John, Jack, and Henry. That's all I have. I need to call my husband. And so she's loving it. She runs away and gets to be the victim. Because especially, she's been the one that everyone hates so far this season. And so now that the tables have turned and Lisa is thinking in her head, she's running off to call the husband. But I think it's a celebratory call. Because even though she was acting like she was so upset, in her head, you know that Lisa was just like, oh my God, this is so good for me. Because she thought she was going into season three going to be the villain because she called her best friend Meredith the 10 years of garbage whore, fucked half in New York, the husband can't keep a job. So now going into the season, she expected everybody to hate her, rightfully so, because she was a monster on the hot mic. And yet, now she's turned it around and made herself the victim for the rest of the season. It's beautiful work. Beautiful work, Lisa. And so she's running off like, all I have is John, Jack, and Henry. I got to get out of here and call my husband. Really, she's going to fucking call up that husband of hers who's just waiting around because I don't think he's going to job, ladies and right. But she's going to call him and be like, guess what, John? I'm the victim now. Like, this whole season's going to be about me being the victim. She won, and I'm proud of her. Just good for you, Lisa. I like her, and I'm happy about it. So she storms out. Heather started seemingly crying for a minute. Like, I think she was getting teared up, but it was also hard to tell because I think they were all getting drunk. Like, I think by this point, they were blasted. And so Jen then turns around about herself because she's realizing she needs to be the victim this season because she thought that that's what all the other women were doing at this 1998 Scottsdale, Arizona house, was making this whole event, this cast trip about Jen Shaw being the victim, even though she's pled guilty to the crimes of bamboozling the elderly. But she says, all I have is my fucking family and kids. Everything has been taken away from me. So she's pissed that Lisa's saying that all she's got is John, Jack, and Henry. And Jen's like, I don't have nothing. She's like, I'm going to prison, she's basically saying. And she probably is. And then they're mad at Whitney. They turn around to Whitney and say, Whitney created all this confusion. Meredith goes to tell Lisa. She didn't say nothing specific about rumors. And it's all happening while they're wearing garbage or lingerie. And Whitney keeps lying. And Whitney tried to pause everything for a minute. She's like, can we just have a mental health pause for a second? And I was like, Whitney, what? I love Whitney. I hated her for a minute. And now I'm just like, I love her. I love her. She's my fave. And she's fucking nuts. They're all fucking nuts. And when I say she's my fave, I really mean each one of them is, because I can make the argument for any one of these gals at any given moment. If gun to my head, if somebody was like, hey, why do you love Lisa? I'd be like, okay, I'm ready. She loves Taco Bell. She's a Diet Coke drinking gal. And she knows how to turn around and be a victim. She called her best friend at 10 years a garbage whore. Your husband can't keep a job. Fucked half of New York. And she's great TV. And then if they said Heather Gay, I'd say she'd give blowjob for a hamburger. I relate to that. And she is stunning and I love her. So really, I could do it for any of them. And so I'm proud of them all. Lisa, meanwhile, she says she okay. If you're driving, pull over, because this is actually going to be tough to hear. And so this was a direct quote from Lisa Barlow. I'm an empath. I absorb it all. Now, I am... Okay, this is going to be a controversial thing for me to say. And I've said on this podcast before that I believe that I am an empath as well. And yet, I think people say that they're empaths too much, myself included. Because nowadays, I feel like everybody says, oh, I'm an empath. Myself included. I'm sure if you go back to the archives, you'd be like, Danny, you said you're an empath 100 fucking times. I love decorating the house and getting furniture, but sometimes it could be overwhelming to design a space. And so luckily, I'm here to tell you about a company called Cozy. Now, Cozy is fantastic, a North American company that thoughtfully designs furniture made for modern living. Now, Cozy strives to provide the best furniture shopping experience with elegant, super high quality products, plus fast delivery and easy assembly, which is really important to me because I do not like putting together furniture. So the easier, the better for me. Now, Cozy offers beautiful, customizable sofas and sectionals that are made to adapt in time. This means customers can add seats to the sofas over time. Maybe if you're extending your family, you might want more space on the couch. Cozy also offers a great range of coffee tables, washable rugs, wall shelving, credenzas, TV stands, and accessories. So much. It's thoughtfully designed furniture made for modern living. There's an outdoor sofa and tables collection that is fantastic. It's called the Mistral. So you can choose the perfect sofa configuration for your outdoor setup. Cozy also opened its first retail space on Queen Street in Toronto to push the experience to the next level and allow customers to engage physically with the products. So transform your living space today with Cozy. Visit cozy.com, spelled C-O-Z-E-Y, to start customizing your furniture today. Again, that's Cozy, C-O-Z-E-Y.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And I'd say, yes, you're right. But it feels like everybody is doing the empath work now. Everyone, even Lisa Barlow, the last person on earth I'd say is an empath. I mean, certainly she called her best friend at 10 years. I'm sorry to keep saying it, repeat it. Garbage chore, behind a mic, husband can't hold a job, fucked half in New York. I don't think those are the qualities of an empath. As an empath myself, I don't believe that a real empath would say those things because they would feel empathetic to their friend of 10 years for saying those things. Do you get what I mean? I feel like it's a little contradictory. So of all the people on this cast, if I'm going to rate them, I'm going to make a list. Lisa, Meredith, Whitney Wild Rose, I mean, the whole kit and caboodle. If I'm making a list, who am I going to say is the biggest empath? I'd say the biggest empath was Heather. That'd be my guess if I had to rank them. Certainly Lisa would be at the bottom of that totem pole. Maybe Jen Shah, because I don't think you could also be an empath while bamboozling the elderly. Call me crazy. But I'd say maybe like Jen Shah are at the bottom for that one. I just think they would be at the low end of the list. Anyway, she says she's an empath. Meredith says, Lisa runs off to the room and Meredith's like, I'll check on her in 4 minutes. And I love the idea of like, just we're going to wait 4 minutes, set the clock. Four whole minutes. And then Meredith says, you said you heard she was in fact a whore. she says to Whitney Wild Rose. And then Heather says, again, being the voice of the people, she says, what if Lisa is a whore? What if she does blowjobs for Vita Tequila? I'd give a blowjob for a burger. My bar is low. And that's what I've been waiting for somebody to say this whole season. She's a business gal. She's a business gal. A business gal. I've learned anything from those TikToks of Bethany Frankel that are in my feed every goddamn second. It's that business gal's got to do what a business gal's got to do. Anyway, this all happened at a New Year's Eve jazz game. Heather says she didn't hear this. It was Angie K or Angie H, or I don't know what the fuck, which Angie it was, but one of the Angies was talking about this at the Utah jazz game. And Whitney's like, I stood courtside at the jazz game and she told us that. And then I think Heather said, you were two rows back. And so they're arguing about which row they were in at the Utah jazz game. And then Heather says, I didn't hear that. And if I did, I would fuck too, because I love sitting courtside. Fuck you for calling me a fucking liar. Fuck you.
Tale as old as time.
People fucking for courtside seats. I mean, who among us are here to judge? May God judge us. Isn't that the saying? I don't remember, but I feel like that's the saying. Let God judge. So I'm not here to judge whoever wants to fuck somebody for courtside jazz tickets. I'm with Heather Gay on that one. Yeah, if you want to sit courtside, you do what you got to do. If you want to get your Vita Tequila in the bar, I'm not here to judge. I've seen people do way worse. Ladies, am I right? Anyway, then Whitney says, fuck me because I love to be fucked. And that's how it ends. That's how it ends. To be continued, flawless television. I can't believe that we're lucky enough to be in this era of perfection. Perfect TV. And I just want to say to the gals, God bless. God bless. And God is judging you. And you know what God's saying? She's saying, good job, ladies. You deserve a raise. I don't know if Andy Cohen's listening to this. Anyone at Bravo can give these gals a raise, but they deserve it. I don't know. Give them a bonus or something. Is there like a bonus for talking about blowjobs and jazz tickets? Because I feel like that should be in the contracts. Maybe moving forward, it's just one line. Like if we can make a whole fight out about giving blowjobs for Utah Jazz courtside tickets, then we get a bonus. That's when the bonuses are enacted, right? You get an extra $1,000 or something. I'm not sure. Or just maybe free glam for the week or some merch. Maybe get some Bravo merch, some t-shirts or some old DVDs of the Real Houses in New York. Remember they used to sell the DVD sets at Target? I'm sure they got a bunch of those laying around a warehouse somewhere. What do they got to do with those? People don't even own a DVD player anymore. Let's get the gals the bonus and you get a bunch of DVDs. From the Target collection of the Bravo DVD collection. That's what I think we need. The to be continued. I didn't see on my copy of this show, I didn't see any scenes from next week. So I don't know what happens next week other than the show keeps getting better, I assume. Because if there's one thing I've learned, it's that the show can keep getting better. And I was wrong because I was going into the season maybe thinking a little bit like they only had five women, it wouldn't be as good. But I was wrong.
Learning you were wrong.
I was wrong. Okay, that's the episode. I love you all so much for listening. I do want to say that the schedule is going to be a little different this week, so I'm not going to be covering Potomac, but I do have a great episode all about Bravo stuff with some great guests coming this weekend on Sunday night. And then next week, I think I might be off on Wednesday, but then we'll be back and better than ever. So sit tight, little bear, and stay tuned to the podcast feed for all the updates. Subscribe, follow wherever you listen. It helps a lot, too. By the way, if you don't do that, it really helps. So just click the subscribe or follow button. If you listen to Spotify or on the Apple Podcast app, wherever you listen, just click that button because it really helps us out a lot with the ads and all of that kind of good stuff. So I know it's a pain in the butt and it's like an extra step to do. And I get it if you don't want to do it. I mean, whatever. Don't do it if you don't want to do it, but it would really help me out a lot. So I'd love you forever. By the way, also helping me out a lot, everythingiconic.store, get the book, signed copies at everythingiconic.store, or you can get it from the web, from the Amazon or wherever you get your books, independent bookstore. That said, let's do our breathing exercises. Let's take a deep breath in. Hold it. Breathe out. Wow, needed that breath. Like the gals did in the middle of this episode when they said, let's all take a deep breath. I think somebody stopped the argument and said, let's take a deep breath. Whitney said it. She said, we need a mental health pause. Let's take our mental health pause. Let's take a deep breath in. Let's do some healing. Breathe out. Do you feel like you healed? So if you healed, I want you to let out all the bad feelings and feel healed. And may you all go forth healed. With good feelings. And I love you. I love you all so much for listening. And oh, go listen to some Angela Lansbury. Go watch an Angela Lansbury performance somewhere. And just, I think it's important that we lose these legends all the time. And there's, it's unfortunate that we lose a lot of people that we love and who've given us so much. But I think one of the great things about pop culture is these people who've passed, they live on through their work. And so Angela Lansbury, I mentioned Bea Arthur earlier, who was good friends with Angela Lansbury, and I've been rewatching The Golden Girls, so I feel like that's why Bea is always on my mind, even though I feel like I'm basically always rewatching The Golden Girls. And then Betty White, who recently passed as well, she had, it was online, like they were auctioning off everything at her house, and I spent the one night in bed. You could see all the auction items, and it was all of Betty's stuff. Like, they were auctioning off every item that she had in her house, and I wanted to buy stuff, but it was also very expensive, and it made me kind of sad, though, and I just think we collect things, and then at the end of your life, if it's not passed down, it just sort of goes into the ether, gets auctioned off for anyone to have. But in terms of these pop culture legends, it's also pretty amazing that their work can live on, and we can tune into The Golden Girls, we can watch an old episode of Murder, She Wrote, or listen to Tales Old as Time, or something like that, and just relive their work. And I think any entertainer, any person that puts out art or work or content or whatever you want to call it, I think that that would be the ultimate thing, is to just know that audiences can still enjoy your work and that you did something that people will enjoy for years and years to come. And Angela Lansbury certainly did that. A queen, an icon, and a legend. And I loved her. And so, yeah, go check out some of her work or some of her art. Love you all so much for listening. And we'll be back whenever we are. Love you all. Stay healed.